It was a busy month for Scott Frost and his staff as they wore two hats, recruiting for Nebraska and helping UCF to a Peach Bowl win against Auburn. We'll recap the last month and how that momentum generated is affecting Nebraska football. Plus, we'll also take a look back at the Huskers 2018 early signing day class with expert Sean Callahan. It's all coming up next on NET's Big Red Wrap-Up. And hello again, everybody. I'm Andy Kendi in for Kevin Kugler. Welcome to Big Red Wrap-Up. No bowl game for the Nebraska Cornhuskers, but still plenty to talk about, including their new coach navigating his way through a bowl victory against a big-time SEC opponent. We're going to break it all down for you, even bring you up to speed and some late-minute changes to the Husker roster. And joining me tonight, as he always does, is Blake Lawrence, along with Damon Benning of 1620 The Zone, and Sean Callahan.
The whole crew. The
whole crew.
This is going to be a busy show, fellas. It's kind of an open round table, if you will. And I guess the first question, Blake, I want to start with you, is everybody agrees what a job Scott Frost and his staff has done in the first month, wearing the two hats, guiding the UCF to the victory, and still able to get a good start on the recruiting class. But above everything, what do you think impressed you the most out of this last month on the job he did?
I would say that's the presence in which he has built within the fan bases of both UCF and Nebraska. I think Scott Frost, he did it the right way. He coached the team to the victory that he needed to and went back. And UCF and everything they did to springboard the coverage and the momentum of the My National Championship, making that claim, all of that helps Scott Frost. And when it helps Scott Frost, it helps Nebraska. The one untalked about thing, or sometimes can be missed, is that he also just had a child. So imagine coaching two football teams on two different parts of the country and having a newborn at home. The guy's impressive already just 1 month in.
Damon, were you surprised that UCF was able to knock off Auburn?
Well, I thought that if it was close, I really liked UCF, especially going into the fourth quarter, because I didn't get the sense that Auburn wanted to be there, and UCF was such a tight-knit group. So once you saw what the X's and O's and kind of the game plan was, especially early, Auburn was fortunate that Milton wasn't sharp early. The offensive concept for UCF, greater than Gus Malzahn and his game plan. And then defensively, they were plus one in the run game for the most part. And so you felt really good about UCF's preparation. I know everybody talked about the big bad SEC and them wearing down UCF, but people forget kind of not their mantra, but the rally cry. UCF trains to play five quarters. They see, you know, 85, 90 snaps a game going into that fourth quarter. They hadn't even felt like a fourth quarter type football team yet. A lot in the gas tank. I was pretty impressed with their preparation.
Sean, I know we're going to talk about recruiting much more as the hour progresses, but just the miles put on Scott Frost and his staff to get a good start on this 2018 class had to jump out to you.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like what they did because of the way Nebraska recruits. It's a coast-to-coast recruiting effort, and they had to go to California, to Dallas, to Kansas City, back and forth, and land in Orlando at 5 in the morning and then run practice and then come back on a plane and fly back to Lincoln, then go out and recruit more. It was a gamble in a lot of ways for Scott Frost. And I think initially it was met with some criticism or skeptics that, can you really do this? Can you recruit at Nebraska, get a team ready for a New Year's Six bowl game, deliver a good signing class, and still get a team ready to win against a team that was a few plays away from playing in the college football playoff? And he gambled and he won everything. Because if UCF would have went in that game and played poor or looked unprepared, I think there would have been some blowback. Oh, was he really concentrating on the bowl? But that team was more than prepared, as we saw. And then Scott Frost delivered a very good recruiting class here, at least at the early poll of signing day here, the first signing day. So it's about as good of a month as Scott Frost could have asked for.
Yeah, UCF pulling off one of the biggest upsets in bowl season. There's plenty to cover since we've been gone, but we want to hear from you as well. The guys from Phi Kappa Theta have the night off, but you still reach us via text or email at bigred at netnebraska.org. And you can also connect with us through social media. You drop us a question on our Facebook page, or you can tweet at us tonight to join in the conversation. Here's this week's sideline survey. It's all new. What does Nebraska need most in finishing out the 2018 recruiting class? Offensive linemen, defensive backs, or wide receivers? You can head to our website now and cast your vote. Well, there's been a breaking news this afternoon. In addition to the Nebraska roster, Noah Vedral announcing that he is coming home. Of course, Vedral played his high school ball at Wahoo Newman and then followed Scott Frost to UCF, and he's coming back. Sean, what kind of impact can he make, and what kind of a off the radar recruit, if you will, to bring a guy home like this?
Yeah, you know, this really, when Scott Frost first came here, I think this was the first piece a lot of people projected, that Noah Vedral would follow Scott Frost back to Nebraska, because it makes sense in so many different ways. Obviously, his dad, Mike, played for Nebraska, and his three uncles all played for Nebraska, some of them with Damon on the same teams. And he's a guy that wanted to be at Nebraska all along, and he's never been shy about competition. I believe he always wanted this offer from Nebraska. He just wants a chance to come in here and show what he can do. The year that he had at Central Florida was outstanding. Played in 8 games, as you see, was over a 75% completion percentage, guys. So that experience he got in year one is going to go a long way now, because he can come in and during the spring, he's going to have a command of that offense. He enrolled in classes today at Nebraska. His family is driving his stuff back as we speak this afternoon and this morning. I think Mike just pulled in to Wahoo about an hour ago. So it's been a whirlwind of emotions for the Vedral family. But I think he's the kind of guy you want here at Nebraska. Nebraska ball means a lot to him. He's got that experience, and he's a competitor, and he's not going to back down from any of these guys on campus.
Yeah, Noah Vedral announcing his move this afternoon on Twitter, saying at the end that he's coming home to Nebraska. Damon, what kind of move is this for a position group that is somewhat thinner than it was, let's say, a month ago, especially a guy who knows the system already?
Yeah, and there's two things that I think will really help him out tremendously. Number one, he is the consummate competitor. I think he's not a guy that you have to babysit. You drop him on campus, it doesn't matter if he's at UCF, Nebraska, if he's back at Newman. He's going to leave it all out there. So he has tremendous pride in what he's doing. So from a leadership standpoint, it's an easy thing to gravitate towards, because if you don't keep up, he will leave you behind. The other thing is the command that he does have. He's got tremendous experience in this offense. And so right away, with practice protocol, being a good leader in the film room, they're getting a guy that understands Coach Frost's habits. I followed him extremely close in high school. You know he's athletic. He's got good arm strength. He's a tough kid, extremely wiry. I really like it. So you combine a Vedral and a Martinez, and you hope a Jebbia, who is mm-hmm. still continuing to grow and getting bigger. My surprise guy this spring, I think, will be Andrew Bunch, who will be a thorn
really?
In the side.
Right.
Oh, buy yeah. him in.
Okay.
I tell you what, man. This system will fit him well. He is going to be the Robin Miller of the 2018 spring. You watch what
the
I
The Robin Miller.
Oh,
he is. Old school.
Well, you know, Robin Miller always had those great springs, and you wondered if it was going to translate into the fall camp. But I'm telling you, keep an eye on Andrew Bunch.
You didn't mention O'Brien, O'Brien.
I think he's a guy that's going to be wait and see.
Yeah.
You know, whether he was enrolling in classes or not was kind of a key. To kind of let you know what he was going to do, and maybe he'll see what happens through spring. I don't believe that both of those guys coming back stay.
Jebbia and O'Brien.
Jebbia and O'Brien.
Mm-hmm. But I think one will, and we'll see who that one is. But listen, I'm all for competition. And I think we finally have a coach here in the last 20 years that will leave no stone unturned Monday through Friday to put himself in position to have success mm-hmm. on Saturday. And that means playing the best guy available. He will coach himself into having options, so multiple people will be ready, because Monday through Friday will have significance.
The other piece of news today of Nebraska officially announcing Barrett Rood joining the staff as the inside linebackers coach. We all figured this was happening as more of a formality, since the NCAA had allowed an extra position coach and Barrett Rood's the guy. But what kind of move is this, Blake, for a guy coming home that knows not only Scott Frost's system, but obviously knows Nebraska?
He knows Nebraska, and he knows Nebraska, and he knows the highest level of linebacker play in football. And Barrett Rood, I played with Bo Rood, and just being in the same room as Bo Rood, you were with a coach while he was a player. So it's in their bloodline. They know how to play the game, and Barrett Rood is somebody that you should respect across all levels of sports, all levels of life. He's somebody that's going to represent Nebraska well, because he knows what it takes to come here, become a leader, excel at the next level. And I think that's what is going to be very good for him in terms of getting him out on the recruiting trail, because there's so many stories about come to Nebraska. And when he's talking about Lincoln, Nebraska, it's not his new home. It is his home. This is where he grew up. And when he talks about building the next level of leaders at Nebraska, he was one.
And we saw it with Will Honus.
Yeah.
He was able to beat out Wisconsin and Iowa for an inside linebacker both programs wanted.
That's right. A Midwest guy staying in the Midwest trying to represent Nebraska in the Big Ten. Like Barrett would be the right example of each phase of the recruiting process for getting great linebackers at Nebraska, and it's something that Scott Frost will need in the coming weeks.
How big is culture in terms of building this within? I mean, we toss that phrase around, culture this, culture that, but is there some truth to that in terms of strengthening a culture that can help not just recruiting, but the whole product as a whole, Dean?
Yeah, I think it's the absolute most important thing, whether you're running a for-profit, a non-profit, a private public sector, an athletic director, or the athletic endeavors. The ability to set a culture and have it kind of govern what happens with all the little individual entities that operate within it is a powerful thing. You know, players can feel when there's a strong presence and a strong culture. The one thing that I took away from the bowl game outside of the X's and O's was the fact that they have a family culture. It was reach one, teach one. Yep. Whenever they were under duress or there were tricky situations, you saw the hand hold or the shoulder rub or the helmet pat, the ability to buy in and play for one another. And that next man up concept, didn't matter what happened throughout the course of that game, the chemistry and the culture was what was prevalent. It was one in which they were accountable to one another, for one another, as a representative of that coaching staff. If they can embody a similar culture here, they will be off and running. He is inheriting a team that I believe truly wants to be fed and led, right? You can't feed those that aren't hungry. And he has got a group here in Lincoln that is yearning for leadership. They want to be a part of something special. I think he's coming into a good situation.
The situation that the players are walking into this week, too, is one that is very unique in college sports, and it is the offseason started yesterday, when the very first time you walk into the weight room and you get that lifting card, and it's like another language. You look down at the piece of paper and you say, what lift is this? What's the timing of this? Why we're here a little bit longer than we're normally here. We stretch a little bit longer than we normally do. The offseason and building that culture starts with the first day walking in and meeting a new strength staff. And Coach Duvall, somebody that is not foreign to Nebraska, is somebody that's going to get them started. I know they got them started this week. And you talked about being prepared to play five quarters of football. This is someone that is going to bring a certain level of passion and energy. And Duvall and anyone on that strength staff, it's not talked about enough. College football players spend more time with the strength staff than the coaches, guaranteed. And so if you want a good culture, it starts with guys like Duvall. It starts with the feeling that the players get when they walk into the weight room, their weightlifting card, and that's what's going to start to build that family, that environment, that team that you want to cheer for no matter who it is. And it started yesterday.
It'll be interesting to see just what comes out this winter. Mm-hmm. You know, how early are they going to go?
Right.
I mean, you always hear we're going harder than ever before, but truly, will that be the case? I believe so. I mean, I think.
I thought we worked our tails off under Kennedy, and then Coach Dobson came in. You know, and we can have your pros and cons of different strength staffs and structures, but you do work harder, and it's not just the first. It's anything new as a football team in the offseason. It breeds a new level of competition because you don't just want to be the best in spring practice.
And there's competition
the best
in the weight room too, right?
I think that's where it starts.
Right, it does.
I think that's where it starts. I think the first one to tie their shoes, the first one to do their lifts at a high level. things like that matter because when you're not competing, it should feel awkward to you. You should say to yourself, boy, something isn't right with this. I think the ability to rev high when no one is watching really allows you to put it into what would feel like neutral come game time because you prepare in such a way where time doesn't matter. That's the ultimate goal of what happens in offseason, and competition is the key because I say this all the time. I think as a coach, you want to coach yourself into having options. Options are being able to go to the next man up. Whatever UCF was doing that allowed the majority of those guys to stay injury-free, the way that they did for a good chunk of that season, that's the kind of culture that needs to be prevalent in that weight room, taking the body to places that you don't think it can go, putting yourself in those football positions to be a functional product on Saturdays. That is all part
nutrition
of the culture.
Plays a huge factor too.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that they're on the cutting edge.
Yeah, and Sean, you saw them at the Peach Bowl. This is a UCF team. They run a high octane offense. They don't take much time between snaps, and the defense doesn't get much time to rest because it's such a high paced offense. So conditioning and strength and conditioning is key.
Oh, yeah, and I think that was a question going into a bowl game with a coaching change, knowing that every single person in that office was going to Lincoln. You know, would that team be physically ready to go with the layoff? And they were more than physically ready to shut down Auburn's running game the way they did and really kind of force Auburn to have to throw more than they wanted to. That's what opened my eyes the most. I think Shenander and the defense, a lot of people wondered, what is this going to look like? How can they match up with an elite SEC offensive mind, Gus Malzahn? And they proved that they could match up with that and kind of took him out of what he wanted to do. And the open field tackling that they showed in that game, I mean, there was a lot of things that I was like, I wasn't expecting it to look as good as it did.
Especially coming off a couple games, Blake, where the defense for UCF gave up a lot of points and a lot of yards.
Yeah, and that's something that you will hope that is a change or some adjustment to coming into the Big Ten and understanding. And we can have some more conversations about the new Nebraska in the Big Ten here in just a second. But that is something that you want to see, not just a Nebraska team that is going to put up a lot of points because of the trickery and the creation of the things you've seen from some Scott Frost offenses in the past, but also a defense that's going to be stout and needs to be stout, especially to excel. And the big bad SEC, everybody can cheer against them. The SEC lost last night, by the way, in the national championship game.
They went 1-1.
1-1.
Yeah.
So, but when you see a team like UCF rally and beat an SEC team, it's about talent, but it's more about the way in which those guys rallied and wanted to win for their coach.
All right, here to give us another view on what has happened this last month, we're pleased to be joined by Tom Dienhart from BTN.com. Tom, thanks so much for joining us tonight. I want to ask you, first of all, a national perspective, what's your view about how nationally Scott Frost has been viewed from afar, wearing the two hats? I know that there was some skepticism early on, but he seemed to pull it off, not only locally, but nationally.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's hard to do that. Stay, want to be involved with the team you're leaving and coach them in the bowl game and then put your other hat on and try to conduct your new job. But it looks like, Frost pulled it off, signed some decent recruits in late December. We'll have another signing period coming up. It's going to be critical to see how he can finish up that first class in early February. But again, so much momentum he's bringing to Lincoln. It's an awfully exciting time.
Tom, it was interesting. He said with a straight face that in his very first press conference that he was hoping that the Big Ten would have to adjust to him. There's this behemoth in the West known as Wisconsin that a lot of people feel like they have to train and prepare for. Do you get the sense that he can put Nebraska in a position where maybe Wisconsin has to adjust?
I think so. Like you said, Wisconsin's sort of the standard bearer in the Big Ten West. But still the good news for anybody in that division, there's no Ohio State, there's no Michigan State, there's no Penn State, there's no Michigan. I guess my point is, while Wisconsin is formidable, it's certainly a program that can be caught. And everybody knows what Wisconsin's going to do. They've got a great system, but again, we all know Nebraska's heritage, the resources, the potential there. I don't think anybody believes that if this hits like we think it's going to hit, that sooner rather than later, Nebraska should be right on Wisconsin's heels and hopefully getting back to Indianapolis for the Big Ten title game.
Tom, you follow the assistant coach stuff as well as anyone I know in the business. What were your thoughts on just how Scott Frost brought everybody with him from UCF to a big Power 5 job, and how rare is that in your eyes, especially in today's high-dollar business of college football?
I like that a lot. It reminds me, this is going back 20 years now, I guess, but reminds me when Joe Tiller went from Wyoming to Purdue, and he brought his entire staff with him. And, you cannot underscore the continuity that means to a staff. To have that that whole staff come collectively. They know how each other works. They know the methods. They know how their system works. They know what they're looking for from personnel. So I think there's a lot to be said from being able to bring an entire staff with you, because that whole machine knows how it operates, and they can hit the ground running. And there's going to be adjustment for the personnel standpoint, but again, for the staff to have that continuity, I think it's big.
Tom, obviously, a couple things have to happen here in the next couple months for Scott Frost. He has to finish off the recruiting class, obviously, of 2018, but also he's got to take his team through his first set of spring practice. What are two or the three storylines that you'll be looking at with Nebraska football as they head into spring practice leading up to their spring game on April 14th?
Well, how many people are going to be at that? I mean, it's always a great event, packed. That's going to be extra special this year. You know, there are exactly three, I think, three big ones for me. One's obvious, the quarterback spot, of course. Tanner Lee's gone. What's going to happen at quarterback? I know they have a big recruit, but again, you have to sort through what he has on campus. So, number one, you got to get the quarterback spot figured out. And then for me, it's up front, the offensive line and defensive line. You know, for too long, that offensive line has been, you know, sort of a middling unit, and we all know the history and heritage there. And then that's a part of the offense that has to get better. I like the skill at running back and wide receiver. And again, you know they're going to be a quarterback figured out, but can they get that offensive line to work in the championship caliber front? And then the defensive line, too, fellas. I think that's a unit that has a lot to prove on the edge and inside. So, again, quarterback, offensive line, defensive line, to me, would be the top three priorities.
Tom, looking at the schedule for Nebraska in 2018, it is not an easy schedule at all. So Scott Frost's first year on the road against Michigan, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Ohio State, and Iowa. What's your record prediction? A quick
estimate. All right, wow. Put them on the spot.
Not a lot of softballs, yeah, right, Tom.
Yeah,
a lot of softballs.
Actually, you can pick a softball and pick which one of those do you think Nebraska beats? So you got to get one of them, right?
You went kind of quick there for me again. What do they got? Who's the cross division opponent?
On the road against Michigan, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Ohio State, and Iowa. All of those on the road.
Michigan, Northwestern, Iowa, Wisconsin.
And Ohio State.
I think Iowa can always be had in Northwestern as well. The others could be more difficult. I think if Nebraska could go 7-5, 8-4 overall, to me that would be a nice season.
A great season.
A season of transition. You know, you want to get to a bowl, even if you have to sneak in at 6-6, at 6-6. That just helps you show recruits tangible proof that you know what you're doing and you can succeed there. So again, you want to avoid blowouts. You want to be competitive in games where you know you're the underdog. Then you have to win the game you're supposed to win again, and hopefully you can steal maybe one or two that you're not supposed to. So we saw Jeff Blom do it at Purdue this year, guys. It looked like a hopeless situation. Nebraska's certainly not hopeless. It's a lot better than Purdue. So, again, Frost steps into a situation. I know he has his challenges, but there's talent there, there's potential there. If he's as good of a coach as we think, I'd like to think he can at least get that team to 6-6, not maybe 7-5.
Hey, Tom, thanks for joining us tonight. Thanks for taking time out to be on Big Red Wrap-Up. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, fellas. Stay warm and enjoy the end of recruiting season.
Yeah, you bet. Tom Dienhardt, BTN.com. Fellas, Blake talked about the schedule. 2018, it is a brutal list of games when your crossovers are at Ohio State, at Michigan, and then you get Michigan State at home. What
great
happened?
Home schedule, though.
Good home schedule. What's your take?
I'm probably the only guy on this stage that couldn't care less.
No.
Right? I mean, because listen, I hear this every year. Uh-huh. Insert team. We heard this last year with Wisconsin. And let me tell you what doesn't happen. You're not in the off season and you're not training in the weight room and guys say to themselves, hey, listen, I don't know if you heard this, but we got to go on the road to Ann Arbor, Wisconsin, and Evanston here those first three games. Let's not train that hard. That will never happen. So there's this competitor in me that's had to do this before that couldn't care less what the schedule is. Injuries come up, momentum happens. Teams, if you always played the game on paper, Why bother showing up? All this angst and hand-wringing over the schedule. Nebraska will win their six games. You'll have a toss-up for two. You'll put yourself in position to get to eight. I firmly believe there's six wins out there, and he's got a shot at eight minimum. But regardless of the win and loss record, will Nebraska play in such a way that will elicit some pride in who they want to be in year one? That is the absolute key, much, much greater than wins and losses.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm ready to play if you are. Sounds like you're ready to go. Yeah, no kidding.
It's what I do.
Up next on the wrap-up, we'll get a quick social media update from Blake, as well as see some sights and sounds from Nebraska's volleyball national championship. Later on, we'll break down that first wave of 2018 commits with Sean Callahan. But first, look back on the 2017 season with some photos from Aaron Babcock and Hale Varsity. Stay with us. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to NET's Big Red Wrap-Up. I'm Andy Kendi, along with Blake Lawrence, for our social media update, a special college football playoff championship game edition. Blake, what you got?
It is some good tweets about the college football championship, but we're going to actually talk about Nebraska, which was mentioned amongst the crowd, because there was a very popular person at the game, and the most popular, according to Stuart Mandel from SI, was not even coaching. It's Mr. Scott Frost. And
Matt Davison.
I think he's talking about Matt Davison.
You're right.
He doesn't even mention Frost. The most popular man in Atlanta is Matt Davison.
How about that? Who knew?
How about that? Next one here, Josh Schrader, 22. Bama's dynasty can end now. It's Frost in Nebraska football's turn. Josh is unbiased fan in public and social media. We found him, and he agrees, and I think everyone agrees, that Bama's dynasty can end soon. I hope.
Five titles in 9 years.
Yeah, I'm just getting bored. College sports only. When you realize there's 8 months until the next college football game, and this is a sad, sad Lieutenant Dan, and we're all sad Lieutenant Dans, but excited, because in 8 months, we get to see what happens when Frost takes the reins.
I'm just impressed you didn't say dilly-dilly during this whole segment.
Dilly-dilly.
Thank you, Blake. But just because Nebraska football didn't have a bowl trip didn't mean that Sea of Red stayed in Nebraska in December. Thousands of fans made the trip to Kansas City to watch Nebraska volleyball capture their second national championship in 3 years.
With as much as we lost last year, we were really happy to get this far.
Everybody's been chasing Penn State with what they've done over the last 10 years. I think the most exciting rivalries in college volleyball, both teams bring out the best in each other.
When we came back and then forcing a fifth set, it was euphoric. We weren't even in the national championship. Winning that game and getting to the national championship, amazing.
It was just so electrifying, all the fans, and they were just so excited.
The players decided it's not rebuilding, it's reloading, and you know, that's Nebraska.
We just have this mentality that I've never had on a team, that we know that we all have each other's backs, and no matter what happens, we're in it together.
Winning a national championship seems like kind of a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And so to be here a second time is something that I'm super grateful for. And, you know, I wouldn't want anyone else to be the most outstanding player other than Kelly. I mean, she's the most deserving person on our team. She works so hard every single day, and she's such a great leader and mentor to all of us. And we definitely wouldn't be here without her.
This has been an unbelievable, fun season to coach. And I really appreciate it, and I'm very thankful. When you have teams like this, you got to enjoy every moment.
We proved a lot of people wrong, and we grinded all season long, and it was a long season, but we worked every single day, and that made us so close. So I'm going to remember this group for a really long time.
It's just the power of belief and commitment and really wanting to do something and maxing out their talent. These guys gave everybody an example in the sport of volleyball that you don't have to have five All-Americans, but you saw a team play great team volleyball.
Man, what a season for Nebraska volleyball. Congratulations, John Cook and his ladies. And Bill Moose said it right when he took the job, that volleyball is his poster child program. And they lived up to it, adding another chapter, Damon.
It was the craziest thing ever. I'm team John Cook, right? I think he's one of my favorite people on campus. And just getting a chance to spend any sort of time with him. He's one of those guys that says he's a lifelong learner, and then he embodies it. He's constantly studying and tinkering with his craft while not getting too far away from his core values on what make a good team. And then you surround yourself with a couple of feckies and you get a big game hunter like she was this year. And this wasn't supposed to be his year.
Yeah, isn't that cool, though?
And they were tremendous in doing so. Like, Florida had to be thinking to themselves, what in the world have we gotten ourselves into during this final?
Yeah, and especially because they had met earlier in the year and they'd lose the Rolfsons.
Yeah, that was early, and we're wondering what's going on. Wait a minute, is Nebraska volleyball 0-2?
No doubt. I think that what I loved is you see the celebration, you see Kayla Banworth, bringing her back, somebody that was a known commodity at Nebraska volleyball and went on and played at USA volleyball and just got the experience that it takes to come back and lead. And somebody that I actually, we were in the same class coming into Nebraska, and just a passionate individual. And you see some people that fully embrace what it means to play at Nebraska. She did that from day one. When we were on campus together, student athletes, and now to see her come back, I think there's something hidden in that story about the value of bringing your own back into the program.
Culture.
And the passion.
Yeah. Culture.
How about her humbling herself as a tremendous player in her own right?
Amazing story.
To take a step back and learn from, that's truly Yoda and Luke, right? Yep. May the frost be with you. And for her to come in with that kind of humility, that was outstanding.
Boy. All right, let's bring it back on the tracks here. We're going to step back from Nebraska
college sports
for a bit. The women's basketball team at Tiny Grace University in Omaha having a decent season so far, but this story from Mike Tobias of NET News is about more than just wins and losses.
We're just not patient enough. And what's great is we have the double, but what we don't have now is the double screen. Let's go.
Coach Brandon Rogers is going easy on his team tonight.
Here we go, one more time.
They've just played 4 games in 5 days, including trips to Arkansas, Oklahoma, and South Dakota. And the 8-person team is down to 7. One player is sick and injured. For every big-money, high-profile college sports program, there's a Grace University. They compete in the National Christian College Athletic Association and have won a few championships. Unlike their major conference neighbors, Grace Athletics doesn't have things like showers with heated floors, lockers with built-in iPads, charter flights to games. The Royals travel in a rented 15-passenger van.
So we'll have tomorrow off Friday. Our game's at 6.
It's a small college that started the season with a new coach and big dreams.
Simple things.
Our goal is to get to regionals. It's never been done since we've joined the Division I and the NCCAA, so we're excited. We're hungry.
But a few weeks before games started, this happened.
My first reaction was, what?
What? Like, wait, what? No, like, I was supposed to graduate from here. I'm supposed to have, like, my 4 years of basketball here.
Obviously, that hit us all very out of the blue, and none of us expected that by any means.
Blaming low enrollment and financial challenges, Grace decided to shut down after this school year.
Some days are hard, and it's, man, like, this really sucks. Like, what am I going to do next year? And helping each other through that, and then some days we joke about it, like, oh, our school is closing, like, what is going on, you know, and we make light of it.
You know, like, Coach will park in two parking spots with our van on trips and be like, oh, it's okay, our school's closing.
It is dark humor, very dark humor.
They talk about it, but most of the time they're just college kids having fun and playing a game they love. Playing with a sense of responsibility to leave a lasting memory of Grace Athletics. Because now, they're the only team left on campus. Sean Cleaver is men's basketball coach at Grace, but he doesn't have a team. For various reasons, closure led to canceling the men's season. So instead of leading a team he felt could compete for a national championship in another year, he spent the fall finding new homes for his players.
Because I felt like there's one last thing I can do for my guys, and that's help them get placed at another school.
Cleaver played ball here. He coached the women's team for a while. His parents met here. Relatives went here when the school started in 1943. Now, as assistant athletic director, he's trying to figure out how you end an athletic program.
Everybody wonders that because this is a first for everybody. You know, how do you close a school? How do you close a program? And we are figuring it out as we go because nobody's ever done this before. People are signing up. We're giving out old uniforms, basketballs, and whatnot, just so people can have a piece of Grace that they, so they can remember it in a positive way. It is very sad, and it hits me at random moments.
She doesn't have eyes in the back of her head, so if you have a seal, she'll at least know a wraparound pass is there.
Rogers and his Royals know more about their next game, their next opponent, than they do about next year.
Good job, there we go.
And they're okay with that. For now, they're making the most of a tough situation.
We gotta be patient. Let's get both of those looks as much as we can. The rescreen is...
It's something incredible because everyone's fighting for something right now. You know what I mean? We're fighting for next year, the unknown. We don't know what it is, but we all are doing it together.
We're gonna go over Omaha first. All right, let me give me that five out here.
There's nothing we can do to change this. Just enjoy the time we have now.
God is good. I know that he has a plan for it and he's gonna take care of all of us.
There we go.
It's definitely brought us closer together and now we really take every game to heart. Before, we were all really looking forward to next season and oh yeah, this season is great, but next season will be even better and now there is no next season.
Let's finish on a good note. Hey, big things coming. We're at seven. Let's keep rolling.
Let's go.
Family on three. One, two, three.
Family!
That's a terrific story. Fellas, I can't even imagine what it'd be like as a college athlete not knowing where you're going to be playing for a school who's going to shut its door at the season end.
Yeah, it's an interesting looking back on your college time. There are, I had a conversation with my little brother who is choosing where to go to school. Mm-hmm. And in that conversation, I said, you're going to remember five games through and through. You're going to remember five plays, like the back of your hand. You're going to have five best friends that never leave you and five moments that really you wake up to or dream about. That's what you know. Mm-hmm. And so for these kids, they're going to be playing for those moments and those teammates.
Very nicely said. Well, up next on the wrap-up, Sean will help us break down all the recruiting news of this past month, a very busy month, including the early signing class for Nebraska. Before that one, one last look at the 2017 season through the lens of Aaron Babcock at Hale Varsity. Be sure to vote on this week's sideline survey question. What does Nebraska need most in finishing out the 2018 recruiting class? As you see right now, offensive linemen looks like the biggest need. You make sure to visit the wrap-up website and cast your vote. Welcome back to Big Red Wrap-Up. I'm Andy Kendi along with Sean Callahan. We're going to talk about the early signing day class for Nebraska and a busy early signing day class, especially knowing that Scott Frost didn't have enough time, a lot of time to put this together.
Well, and that's why the urgency of the hire was so important for Nebraska. Scott Frost played at a conference title game, so they lost an entire week of the 3 weeks you're allotted for this early signing period. And Nebraska was able to really rebound. They had Frost announced on Sunday. By that night, he was conducting in-home visits, and they maximized those 2 weeks, and they were able to sign Andy a very good group of 12, and there's at least maybe 10, 11 or more spots left to go here for Nebraska as they try to close out on February 7th.
Well, one of the guys they did sign is Cameron Juergens of Beatrice High School, who joins us now live via the telephone. Cameron Juergens, hello from Lincoln. And Cam, I just want to ask you, just how has your life maybe slowed down since putting the pen to paper?
It's definitely nice to have that recruiting process over. Kind of get some stress out of the way, but definitely slowed down some of the recruiting, and definitely different colleges getting a hold of me.
Cam, when you go back and just kind of look at the month of December, how stressful was that for you just with the change? Because, you know, Mike Riley, I remember he was recruiting you before you could even drive a car. So to have a change like that happen so late in the process with the early signing day approaching, and then to kind of have to, you know, go through the process again and meet new coaches, what was that last couple weeks like for you?
It was pretty tough, you know, seeing Coach Riley, Tavita go. I had such a great relationship being recruited for so long. I grew that pretty good bond with them. So it was sad to see him go. And it's definitely weird seeing new faces around the stadium. But, I mean, it's a good change. Excited meeting the new coaches and everything. And I think it'll be for the better.
Cam, what was your impressions watching UCF and where you fit in Scott Frost's program?
My impressions were that's a pretty impressive team, you know, to go up against the big dogs like that and not back down. That was pretty awesome to see. They're a fast-paced team, don't huddle, and make a lot of big plays defensively.
When you met Coach Frost, what was that like? I know both of you, his mom coached him in the shot put. Your mom coaches you in the shot put. I mean, there's a lot of similarities. I mean, people on Rivals joke that you guys kind of look alike. I mean, what was it like getting a chance to sit down and meet Coach Frost face-to-face?
Yeah, it was good to meet him. Definitely seems like a cool and calm guy, has a quiet confidence about him, and seems like he really understands football, you know. He knows what it takes to get it done and knows Nebraska football. So that's kind of exciting to have somebody that knows all that to be able to bring it back to where it was.
Real quick, Cam, one last thing before we let you go. I know you suffered the leg injury to close your year. Are you hopeful you can be back to defend your shot put title? What's kind of the timeline for your return into athletics?
I go back to the doctor next week to get off crutches, hopefully. So basically just focus on rehab and getting healthy. I'm not too worried about a track right now, but we'll see how rehab goes. But I don't have any question that I won't be back to full strength before then.
Hey, Cam, congratulations on signing. Continued good luck on your rehabilitation, and we look forward to seeing you in Lincoln coming down the road. It's Cam Juergens of Beatrice High School, one of the new recruits for Nebraska, and it's really a star-studded field. What jumps out at you, Sean, when you look at the big list?
Well, I think first you got to start with junior college recruits. Mike Riley went three straight classes without a junior college recruit. Nebraska signed four of the top 37 JUCO recruits in the Rivals Top 100 for JUCOs, led by running back Greg Bell, the number one running back in the JUCO ranks, a four-star. They beat out Tennessee for him head-to-head. Then Will Honus, the number one inside linebacker, who Nebraska beat out Iowa, Wisconsin, among others, Kansas State, for his services. And Barrett Rood should get a lot of credit. Then you have Deontay Williams. What I like about Deontay, he's got 3 years of eligibility. He sat out a year as a redshirt, so you're going to get him as a three-to-play-three December guy. All four of these JUCO guys are here on campus already. Then lastly, Jerron Woodyard, a wide receiver, runs a 10-6 in the 100, one of the fastest receivers coming out of the JUCO ranks.
One of the recruits everybody's talking about is the quarterback, Adrian Martinez, who people got to watch play football since he was hurt this past year in high school, but he was in one of those All-American games.
Yeah, Adrian Martinez played in the Under Armour All-American Bowl down in Florida here this past week. It was his first game of the year because he had a shoulder injury that kept him out of competition for his senior season. And Nebraska really, it just kind of set up perfectly to get Martinez. He was committed originally to Cal, and they made a firing there. They bring in Justin Wilcox, who's a pro-style guy. Then he commits to Tennessee. They fire Coach Jones there, and then when he got fired, you know, they go back into a pro-style offense in Tennessee. So it allowed Coach Frost to really get in front of him, offer him the kind of offense he wants to be a part of. When you kind of look at all the things he can do with his mobility, Coach Frost said on signing day, he is the type of quarterback that fits my system in terms of what we do. And I ranked him number one out of all the quarterbacks around high school football.
And it will really make spring interesting with all those quarterbacks, correct?
Yeah, you're going to have him going through spring ball with Jebbia, Patrick O'Brien, and then you bring in now transfer Noah Vedral, who's obviously going to have to sit out a year. But the quarterback race and how all these guys will fit, it's going to be very interesting to see how these guys blend in.
And not only the guys who signed scholarships, but there's also a great class of walk-ons in this recruiting class so far.
Yeah, 14 guys already on board in this walk-on class, and it's going to be an emphasis to continue to add. I think you're going to see Nebraska take, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 more walk-ons per year than what they had been taking. That number will probably get around 20. I expect Anthony Banderas to be the next one to go by the week's end. I think once Coach Frost gets back in town, Lincoln Southwest Anthony Banderas will probably join the class to get him at 15, and they'll probably have a few more spots to go. But it's an impressive group. Kenny Wilhite and those guys, Damon, have done a great job with these walk-ons and bringing this class.
Especially the early signing period, a new wrinkle in recruiting this year.
Yeah, it was outstanding. You get a guy like A.J. Forbes, who I've got a tremendous amount of respect for.
Best lineman in Class A.
A lot of experience playing against, right? I mean, he's a guy that is an outstanding player. Arguably the best guy we played against all year in Chris Cassidy from Pius. I remember after we played him, they kicked our tail. That was our one loss. He was the best offensive player on the field. He was the best defensive player on the field. And I pulled him over to the side, and Jablonski had played real well for them too at the quarterback spot. And I said, hey, listen, I've done this a long time. I've seen a lot of good players. And anything that I can do to be of assistance to get you down the street over there to play for my alma mater, I would more than gladly do. They've got a gem in Chris Cassidy. No disrespect to guys like Brody Belt, who we played against. I got a ton of respect for. Cassidy's the guy that when I look at that list right there, that has a chance to have some serious impact before his career is over.
Hey, I want to bring this discussion back to who is leaving the program and who is staying with the program, because we haven't talked about it yet. But Nick Gates and Tanner Lee both saying goodbye to the NFL, and Stanley Morgan Jr. is staying with Nebraska. Blake, just your initial comments. I know that Mitch chimed in on our Facebook page, wants to know about Gates' NFL potential.
Yeah, so I have the fortune of working with NFL agents and get a feel for how they look at players and their structure and whatnot. And Nick Gates is an interesting one. I think that he was ranked as in the teens in terms of a guard in the 2019 draft class. Right, so he was up there. If he would have stayed another year, he could have been a guy that moves up. And there's a lot of guards that get drafted in the NFL draft. So he could have been a mid-round pick in the 2019 draft. Now coming out this year, it's hard to get a feel for where he fits and sits among the guys in this year's class.
So, you gonna get a combine invite, you think?
You would hope so. I mean, any guy that comes out early, someone has to be in their corner saying, don't come out early unless you know you're going to get that combine invite. And sometimes coming out early will give a
automatic
reason to get that invite.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit interesting. I think he's been the victim of some of his own bad decisions, right, if there is such a thing, because there was once upon a time he was playing at an all Big Ten caliber. He's playing out of position. He has never been the same since going from right tackle to left tackle. I said from the jump, not an easy switch. I watched him day in, day out at practices, really try to get acclimated to playing left tackle. Is a guy that if he commits himself in the weight room, has a chance to be a very good guard. And I think we should be very careful about throwing dirt on guys. There's a couple of guys like Lydon Murtha, that are still collecting
Zach Stirrup,
that are still collecting paychecks in the NFL that we kind of left for dead. Mm-hmm. You never know what motivates guys, but let's not forget, as disappointing as he was at times in terms of his lack of effort and apparent toughness and a little bit of want to, at one point in time he was an all Big Ten caliber player.
And Tanner Lee coming back, Sean, I know that you've been close with Tanner over the years. It's almost a matter of circumstance that he jumps to the NFL rather than maybe try to grad transfer to another school, because this offense isn't really suited for a Tanner Lee type quarterback, is it?
Yeah, in all reality, this was going to be a 6-year of college as well. And I mean, that's rare. I mean, I think since I've been covering Nebraska, there's only been maybe two players that have gone through 6 full years of eligibility. So you just don't see guys come back for the 6-year, and then you factor in this change. It would have been a gamble. Now, Coach Frost was very good to Tanner. I talked to Tanner about that, and Coach Frost wanted him back. He didn't say, you better leave, this is probably best for you. Coach Frost said, we would love to have you back if you want to come back here and be a part of it, and you'll be my guy. I'll roll with you if you want to come here, and we'll see if we can make this work. And Tanner had a lot of respect for Coach Frost and how he treated him in this process.
But great news that Stanley Morgan will be back in Nebraska.
That's
great.
That's fantastic news for Nebraska. Nebraska, very thin at the wide receiver position once you start to look at the scholarship guys on staff. And when you can bring back the leading receiver of all time, the best season that a receiver's ever had at the university, he's back. It's the leadership, and it's also there's that feeling where he watched the film and he understands what UCF is going to do, and he's going to be able to have a better year as a senior. And they call him Sunday Stan. I think that he, by staying, has vaulted himself into the spotlight in 2018.
Yeah, you take a look at that wide receiver room and you get an outstanding player. One of my favorites, as you know, from Friday Night Lights, Javon McQuitty. J.D. Spillman returns. You get Stanley Morgan. Mm-hmm. You have Tyjon Lindsey. You start to look at that top five or six. That is a very talented group. Mm-hmm. And Nebraska is getting back two of the best recruits in the 2018 class that they missed in 2017, JoJo Doman and Javon McQuitty. So those are two guys that when you look at getting them back into the fold, Nebraska's starting to really set themselves up to being able to tell a story. The holdover from the program that had a chance to better his draft stock, that's Stanley Morgan. Mm-hmm. The local guy that's going to benefit from the homecoming of your head coach and Scott Frost, that could be a DJ Foster or a Luke Gifford. And then the transformation process of some budding potential stars that haven't gotten there yet, guys like Carlos and Khalil Davis. The pages are being laid for a nice story to be written going forward for this coaching staff.
All right, real quick, guys. One position group you're going to be watching once spring practice begins. How much time?
Can't say quarterback.
You know, I want to see linebacker. I really don't want to see what Honus does. Yeah.
So that's Damon, I bet you're going to say running back.
No, absolutely not. I'm going with the secondary.
Okay.
They've got some work to do, and UCF played downhill and aggressive. I'm going to be watching that secondary.
Running back for me, Greg Bell really intrigues me and what he's going to bring. And can he make the other guys compete harder? Because I think the competition is going to be a lot better with him in that room.
It's going to be fun to watch, and I'd be remiss not to say congratulations to Aaron Taylor, the newest addition to the College Football Hall of Fame. Congratulations, AT. All right, we got one final show left, and we'll see how Coach Frost and staff do when their 2018 class is complete. On National Signing Day, our recruiting special scheduled for Thursday, February 8th at 7 p.m. on NET. We'll take a look at the class of the newest Huskers. NET Sports bringing you more collegiate hockey your way this week. The Red Hawks from Miami of Ohio come to Baxter Arena, take on the Omaha Mavericks this Friday night at 7. You can catch all the action on NET. Our thanks to Tom Dienhart and Cam Juergens for joining us tonight. For Blake Lawrence, Damon Benning, and Sean Callahan, I'm Andy Kendi, and we'll see you next time on NET's Big Red Wrap-Up.